Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what's happening is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. That's our morning motivation here on It's My House. Today, January, what was it, 18th, I believe. Still in January, the new year is still fresh and brand new. We have a very special repeat guest that we've had on here, one of my favorites, if not my favorite. The title of today's podcast is, when we're doing our live stream, The Marva Collins Way 2022 with Patrick Collins, and the number is 619-768-2945. Now, we've got archives of previous interviews where you need to catch those in our, it's right on Blog Talk, so you can catch quite a bit of interviews that we've done with them before. But we're covering new stuff today. And once again, it's Marva Collins Way 2022. And I believe he has a YouTube channel, I think it's Marva Collins Way. But we'll ask him in a few moments here. But in any event, get out your pens and paper or whatever you record with, because I'm sure you're going to be able to take plenty of notes here. So let's, matter of fact, before we open up his mic, Robin, our executive producer, Robin Maben, sent a special prayer out to her. I think she just sent me some text messages. She's in the ER But I'm guessing she can't be too hard if she's texting me from the ER. So she still got her electronics with her. So put her on a prayer circle. In any event, good morning and happy new year, Patrick Collins.
Good morning and good morning, listeners. Happy new year.
Great. We hadn't seen you in a while. I'm glad we were able to touch base again. When I was looking online for you, I ran across a YouTube channel. I believe I'm thinking it's yours, Marva Collins Way.
It is the Marva Collins Academy that's being started there in Reno Sparks, Nevada. A wonderful board, a wonderful group of individuals there in Nevada that they are breathing life back into the Marva Collins Way.
Great, great. Now, how did that all happen?
Well, that's a story. That's a story that could very well take up the entire 3 hours of us of our being together today. Met Jen Lan McCann probably about 3 years ago there in Reno Sparks, and she was she's originally from China, of all places.
Okay.
And we all know how education is paramount in other countries. Sometimes the U.S. and U.S. students don't necessarily take education as seriously as other countries do and see it as the gift and the vehicle,
right,
to move their family members to a higher standing in life and society. But Jen Lan McCann said that she would like to start a school there in Reno Sparks, Nevada. And she graduated Wesley College. So, again, there's really no reason why we have American students that are not, because Chinese was her first language. And she was able to make it through Wesley College and get and earn a degree. And she was very familiar with the Marva Collins Way. She had read my mother's book. And as I said, she was very interested in getting a school started there. As a matter of fact, we have a board meeting tonight. I think this is the third or 14th meeting. And we're looking to get that school started in 2023.
Okay, great, great. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned she's from China. I play on this podcast, at least last year I did. I don't think I played it this year so far, but my regulars are probably sick and tired of hearing it. It's a audio I play based on the documentary titled Factory City. And Factory City is a place in China. This one particular location, but they're prolific at, I mean, manufacturing. But the educational piece is where it all starts. So you have people that apply to go to enroll in these schools that they have at these factories. And the schools teach people how to make coffee pots, irons, a lot of everyday items that we have in our homes here in United States and other Western countries that we take for granted. Well, they have schools that teach you how to make these things. They have an academic portion as well as a practical portion. And they even set up as villages where, I mean, that's all they might make are neckties or coffee pots or soccer balls or basketballs or whatever, or even the electronics that we use. But they have schools set up just to teach, you know, how these, whatever they're manufacturing, and they cross-train them in different things. So, yeah, you're right. They're very big on education over there. I wish we would pick some of that up over here.
Absolutely.
But getting back to you met her. So now, how did it – well, I mean, you got a gold mine there. So, and you were there from the beginning. So it, I guess after you guys developed a relationship, I guess the idea came up, well, let's start a school or resurrect a school.
Well, that was more or less her idea, and we had spoken there just the closing of my mother's schools there in 2006, 2007. There really needed to be a resurgence. There really needed to be an awakening. Most of the people that I don't necessarily know if I could use the qualifier of most. A great deal, a large number of people that know my mom's accomplishments and her overall efforts have either left the educational community or they're no longer living. The time was now. The new generation of teachers, that young teacher. I'm currently on assignment here in Newark, New Jersey at the Gray Charter School. And the second grade teacher, Ms. Red, she left on maternity leave. And the instructor that's taking her place, I mean, is just doing just such an amazing job. All of the concepts that I shared with her, she is employing in that classroom and having the successes that I'm sure the principal wants her to have. So the methodology works. Those who work with it, it works even harder. The children take to it. The children take to the methodology. And as you said, it looms like a shadow in everything that I do and say.
Okay, all right. Will the school come under the same name or what?
It is. It's going to be called the Marva Collins Academy there in Reno Sparks, Nevada.
Okay, all right. Okay, good. So it'll be a brick and mortar school?
It'll be a brick and mortar school, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's Jen Land's, Ms. McCann's wish that they have a subsequent school that will come under the same umbrella that will sponsor children from China. And it will also employ the methodology.
Boy, that's very impressive. Now, what about people that live in, maybe they might not live in China or Reno, Nevada, but they want, you know, they want their children. I mean, online school, is that available or will that be available?
Well, keep in mind that there's only one me, and I'm also working with KDR Global Education Solutions, and we're looking to do a more online presence, a more virtual presence to help those, just like you said, LA, that would like to embrace the overall methodology, but they're not in Reno, Sparks, Nevada, or China.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you might have thought of this already. There's an educator that I follow out of South Korea. Her name is Gwen Lee. And she earns probably about $500,000 a year teaching English to people in mostly South Korea, but I guess some other place around the world. But she does online classes, and she does workshops too. Weekly workshops. That she physically attends. So with the technology out here, although there's just one of you, the capabilities out here with technology, you can be in, you know, several places at, you know, one time.
Absolutely. And that's the way of the world. This whole pandemic, I think that it forced some people to rise to the occasion. and come into that virtual world. Zoom meetings, the Google Meets, and the host mm-hmm. of other, and the myriad and the plethora of other platforms that are out there in which to virtually meet. But LA, there's nothing, but when it comes to education, there's nothing like that in-person learning. There's nothing like that hands-on. There's nothing like seeing that child's actually feeling that child's energy mm-hmm. as they learn to decode words. One of the parents here, their child is in the kindergarten. Right. And I'll just use the child's first name. His name is Benjamin. The mother was so eternally grateful. Apparently on Christmas Day, this child read this anthology that we had been working on and read it for her Christmas Day. The mother got me two tickets to that Van Gogh exhibit, and I think those things are like $90 a ticket, and it was very cold here on the East Coast. Excuse me. And I braved the weather, went into New York and saw the exhibit, but it was her way of saying thank you for what I had done for her son. And that was that in-person learning. That was the reason why I shared that overall all story. The school, like other schools, fell victim to COVID, and there was a 2 weeks virtual session that the children had to be that had to wind up enduring. And it's just not the same. It's just not the right. same as in person.
Well, what about the possibility of, the teacher teaching, training teachers, replicating yourself?
Now, keep in mind, that was the status quo. Ms. Gray, I feel internally, eternally grateful for all that she's done for me and my family. That I've mm-hmm. been I will be here until June, so the opportunity of that happening this year will be few and far between as far as those opportunities. But that mm-hmm. has been in years past the way to pass on my mother's legacy.
Right. Because, man, there's so much there. Because the 60 Minutes piece where I still have to find they did a follow-up interview with Jamal. I haven't been able to find that one. But anyway, when you and your sister were, you guys were like really young then. How old?
Well, I started at my mom's school when I was 10. I was going to a very affluent school on the north side of Chicago, and I'll never forget it. My mother asked me to read one evening, and my reading was very hesitant. And she said, I'm paying all that money for you to read like this. You're coming to school with me. Then she was still teaching in the public school, probably 10 doors down from our home. And I said, but Mom, you teach the second grade, and I'm in fifth grade. She said, you'll learn more with mm-hmm. me in my second grade than you will in that fifth. And then that was, I think, $2,000 a year. And that was a lot of money back then. Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And,
that
I mean,
would be
you know, my mother was a Chicago.
That would be the equivalent to about at least $10,000 today.
Pretty much. And especially because my dad was a factory worker at Sunbeam, and my mother was a Chicago public school teacher. So that was a huge sacrifice. And now keep in mind, just because she took me out didn't mean that she had to stop paying. A man or a woman, the true test of their mettle is to honor their handshake and promise. And they had signed a contract, and they still had to pay that $2,000 every month, even though I wasn't there.
Ooh, okay. Well, they did. Well, you know what? Now, at the beginning of this podcast today, I played a Steve Harvey piece called Faith Street. And if for those of you who haven't seen the movie of the I believe it was titled The Marva Collins Story, starring Cecily Tyson and Morgan Freeman. Not only your mother, but your whole family were walking on Faith Street. So share with us some of the obstacles and how you guys got through it as a family so she can start that school, because I believe it started right in your home. You guys were owned the family had a duplex, right?
Absolutely. One of my very, very dear friends who's listening right now, give her a quick shout out, Ms. McLeod. When I was in flight school and my solo flight, my flight instructor, Chief Warrant Officer Carrington, said that fear is courage that has said its prayers. And I, just from what you just said, LA, that was exactly the rally cry that my mother embraced, that fear is courage that has said its prayers. To have the courage to start a school with $5,000 from her teacher's pension, she didn't know where the first student was going to come from. When they say walk by faith and not by sight, that is moving the tenants, which were the bread and butter, which was definitely a huge component of the overall family's monetary resources, and to move them out. So now you're no longer going to have that revenue coming in monthly, and just now her teacher's salary is not going to be coming in monthly, and just have my dad's factory. I can only imagine what a factory worker. We never discussed it, but I can only imagine what a factory worker made in 1975 there at Sunbeam. So you talk about walking by faith, living on Faith Street. I think that she had probably one of the biggest pieces of property there on Faith Street, because that's exactly what she was – that's exactly
right,
where –
Right, so it came down to – all right, so she left her job, so that paycheck wasn't coming in. Your parents had three growing children, two boys and a girl, and I know boys can eat. Okay, even if you guys were young back then. But you did have that duplex. Now, where did the idea come up? Did she look for a location first? Who came up with the idea? How did the idea come up with, well, let's move the people out?
That was pretty much my mother's idea, and my father, being the supportive force that he was, supported it. And that, you know, now that I reflect back on it, LA, that was what our family was. Our family was a family of support. That when anyone in the family, be it child or a parent, you had the full support. I must say, other than when I first wanted to go to the military, my mother was not in favor of that decision. But at basic training, she was there. My dad was there. My brother was there. My sister was there. I had the support of my family. As a matter of fact, very quick story, kind of segueing. My Drill Sergeant Dukes, when I was in basic, they didn't have boots to fit, and I wore a size 12, a common size for a 6'3" individual, and they didn't have boots. So I went through all 8 weeks of basic training in Reebok high-top gym shoes. And my drill sergeant hated this. He would not let me march with the other soldiers. He'd make me march on the other side of the street. He refused. He used to call them Japanese jump boots, and he would not let me march with the other soldiers. But I share this story in which to say there's a biblical saying of be kind to strangers, for you never know when you're entertaining angels. So my mom comes to basic training graduation. This is like circa 1985, 86. The height of her popularity, and Drill Sergeant Dukes recognizes my mother. And he said, Mrs. Collins, I'm a huge fan. I knew there was something different about Collins, speaking of me. He said, I didn't know what it was, but I knew there was something different about him. And I remember my ocular muscles probably getting their exercise. I'm rolling my eyes and my head thinking, you sorry sack of suds. You dogged my stuff every day, but now you learn that Marva Collins is my mother. And now I'm the best thing since sliced bread.
Right. Oh, man. Well, yeah, that's part of the faith. So your mother had the idea, or she's got, you know, we'll use the other side of the building. The family lives on one side. So now what was the, I mean, after the tenants moved out, what was the next step of Faith?
Well, walking down Faith Boulevard, the boulevard was not one that was commensurate with that journey because it was an apartment. It wasn't a school. So my dad, along with my sister and my brother, we tore down walls. And my dad did the framing. And when you tear down a load-bearing wall, you just can't, and joining two rooms together, you just, I mean, the ceiling would wind up sagging. So my father had to reinforce the ceiling, and now you've joined two rooms to make a one-room schoolhouse. And
let's put a pin in there for a moment. How old were you guys at that time?
Oh, my gosh. Now, remember, I was 10, so we were all 3 years apart. So if I was 10, my brother was 13, and my sister was 7.
Okay, so that was your dad's work crew. And
yes.
Let me throw in there also, Marvin Collins is known for, you know, being a whiz, a prolific at teaching academics. But see, the way I'm hearing the story that you're talking right now is, this is a de facto vocational school, the Collins family vocational school, because you guys were learning the building trades at that age.
Well, it's funny that you should mention that, L.A., because my brother and I both learned. Now, I can't do some of the overall framing and do some of the wiring and some of the other concepts, but some of the basic concepts that my family and I use when we have to do basic repairs, we learned from our father.
Okay. And he learned, well, he didn't have YouTube when he was coming up.
No, you know, my dad grew up during the Depression, and, you know, that's of all these years, my brother and I never reflected of where did Dad learn those carpentry tool and plumbing and electrician, and, I mean, where did he learn all that from? I don't think that's a story that he ever shared with us, but he knew how to do it, and he knew how to do it well. Anyone that has seen, I mean, those of us that are in the audience now, if you Google Marva Collins classroom, schoolhouse, you will be able to actually see. It didn't look, I mean, it was very, very nice. I mean, there was paneling, the overall colors, the everything that was done to that classroom made it look like an actual classroom. It wasn't just some apartment where they slapped some paint on the wall and said, this is a classroom. There were desks, there was carpeting, there were light fixtures, there were blackboards. It wasn't some easel with some whiteboard sitting there saying, this is going to be the overall classroom. It looked like a classroom.
Now, did you guys have to hire any outside help with that at all?
Well, my mom found as students started applying that some of them were kindergarten age, some of them were first grade age. And although it was a one-room schoolhouse, it just didn't lend itself to there being kindergarten and first. So, yes, she hired Miss Lillian Vaughn.
Wait a minute. No, what I meant, Patrick, was before the school even started, Did your parents have to hire any outside contractors?
There were no monies for any outside contractors. We were the outside contractors. my brother, my sister, and myself.
That's Faith Street. Yeah. That's Faith Boulevard. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Continue on. All right. Amazing. So, that right there in itself, in my opinion, the way I'm looking at it, I mean, it's an amazing story. Because I guess I'm looking at it from ways that the average person might not look at it, but your dad was teaching the building trades. You guys were what, 13, 10, and seven?
Seven.
Yeah.
Seven.
You guys were
seven.
Picking up the building trades then, with no YouTube. Simply amazing. Continue on.
Well, I was saying, LA, that my mom, that there was a summer program, and I don't know which mayor was mayor at that time, but there was a summer program, the CETA, and it was some type of acronym. And Lillian Vaughn came to the school through the CETA program and did an amazing job and stayed with the school for over 20 years. And during that 20 years, I mean, this has no bearing up on what we're talking about now. I think Miss Vaughn, during her 20-year tenure, maybe missed 5 days total in 20 years.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Well, people, we're listening to Patrick Collins, son of Marva Collins, and he's a educator in his own right. 619-768-2945 is the number to call, and you just press 1 when you're ready to talk to him. I just refreshed I'm on a new phone here, so it's repopulating so I can see the board if anybody does want to talk to him. I'm still, all right, here we go. It refreshed. All right, yeah, 619-768-2945. Press 1 when you're ready to talk, and here we go. 407 area code. Happy 2022 to you. And you're on with Patrick Collins.
Grand Rising, good morning. L.A., this is Vieta with Soul Purpose Healing and Health and Well-Being, Blog Talk Radio. And, yes, happy 2022. Patrick, I'm just so grateful to hear that you're rebooting and starting the school again that is so needed right now with the proof of the last 3 years of a failed education system just to keep our children healthy and fearless. So congratulations, and I think you and all of us were born for such a time as this, that we have been through one of the most traumatic seasons of our lifetime, and I'm wondering what your new curriculum is going to include, because I'm in the health field. My dad was a football player and an athlete, and he just recently passed at the age of 95, and what he left me, his legacy, was to teach people how to take care of their bodies and to promote health and physical education. So that's my interest, and I'm just wondering
Absolutely.
If you're including that in your program, because it's so important.
And thank you for your kind words. I really, really, really appreciate them. It is very apropos that you would wind up bringing that to the forefront during this pandemic. I was working with the teachers this year, back in 2013, I was doing ancient Greek, concept with the students. And one of the teachers said, well, Mr. Collins, I kind of get it. You know, some of the concepts that we use today came from Latin or came from the Greeks and so forth and the like. But, you know, why do these types of things? And it was an assignment. I used the same office that I always use when I'm here at the Gray Charter School here in Newark.
And in 2013, I had worked with the children on this ancient Greek concept about the start of democracy. And democracy came from the Greek word demos, which meant the people. And I bring that up in which to say it's because the children were out of school for an entire year because of a pandemic. Pan meaning all, dem coming from the demos, the people. So a pandemic is something that affects all people. And they were amazed at how a concept from 2013 is now in the forefront because of the COVID-19. Teaching the children to overall care for their overall bodies, I can't go into it too deeply with the children because keep in mind it is a public school, but letting children know how to think for themselves. And I don't have anything against Arby's or the Arby's Corporation or so forth, but that beef and cheddar has 3 or 4 times the amount of sodium that the national average says that you should have. Now, you say, Patrick, where are you going with this? Well, where I'm going with that is when Arby's gives you 2 for $5, you think that people said, wow, that's an amazing deal. I'm going to buy 2 of them. Now you're getting 6 to 8 times the salt that the human body should wind up having, especially for that African-American male that suffers from high blood pressure and those types of concepts. That sandwich would not be the first choice. So making healthy choices. They're in the cafeteria, letting children know the importance of a healthy mind and a healthy body. And the only way that body can be healthy is by putting healthy things into it. So I do try to get that message across. It might not always be something that I can do in the classroom. Sometimes those messages are a little more subtle.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Well, I have to tell you, my 7-year-old grandchild wanted to do a video. And I said, well, what do you want the topic to be on? And she thought, she looked around. She said, well, let's talk about the lungs. And I was like, the lungs? I said, really? And so I said, okay, you come up with the questions that we're going to ask on this video. I was amazed that this little 7-year-old came up with 8 questions about the lungs. So I think as a grandmother, where we have to start with children in elementary school is just teach them about the human body. We used to have, like, even home economics has been taken out of school. Kids don't know how to cook. They don't know how to keep house. But I think the most important thing we should keep in mind is they need to love their body, know how to love themselves, first of all, like your mother taught so beautifully. And then to teach them about the body itself. So I hope maybe you can include some basic biology and physiology in your new classroom.
Well, and absolutely, and I appreciate again now for the second time the very, very kind words. But more than Michelle Obama being a woman of color, she had the Let's Move initiative. And it was launched by the First Lady, and it was dedicated in solving a childhood obesity. And like I said, there is a very dear friend that is listening now. And just reading her overall book and again, not having any stone to throw at Arby's, but what winds up happening when the marketing team launches those initiatives on television, people, especially in lower income areas, people with $5 say, now I can eat for 2 days. Now I can, and yeah, you're eating, it fills your stomach, but it's going to cause a host of problems down the line. So it's very, very important that children learn at a very early age. There was that show, that Aaron Magruder show, The Boondocks, and I remember there's one episode where two of the lead characters talk about high fructose corn syrup and these types of concepts. And although it was said in a very light moment during the levity, later on in life when those that have diabetes are blinded and half of their foot is cut off or they have strokes, then the laughter then turns into the horror of who takes care of these individuals. So, ma'am, what you're saying is it is as important as the three R's, the reading, the writing, and the arithmetic. It's also the reading, the writing, and how to take care of our overall bodies for the long haul.
Thank you, Patrick. I'll be really praying for you to have a very successful opening and just bring that you will attract all kinds of students and that will learn what they need to learn in these strange times. So thank you, Patrick, for sharing.
Well, that is very sweet of you, and don't you just make salt taste like sugar. I appreciate all of your kind words, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Okay, 619-768-2945 if you want to speak to Patrick Collins. He's live in the studio here on It's My House Today. Patrick, now all right, you guys are opening up or rebooting the school in Reno, Nevada, the brick and mortar. Has anybody tossed around the idea of, let me put it this way. I've got a friend of mine. She lives in Southeast Asia, and she works for a private school system that has over 100 schools. Anybody toss out the idea of possibly franchising what you guys do education-wise?
Well, right now, right now, L.A., I have getting the school in Reno Sparks to fruition is that's going to be the – in answer to your query, I will say the answer is no. But when I think about it and think about what they're looking to overall do after the first school starts, then it is yes. They are looking to use that school as the overall springboard. It will renew the efforts as far as teacher training. Back when my mom was actually teaching, there was a concept, and I would say conservatively worked with over 1,000 teachers and administrators across the United States and now on three continents. But it was a concept where it was a 3-day teacher workshop, and day one, the teachers would come in and they would actually sit in a classroom for an entire day. Day two, they would wind up sitting with either myself or my mother for 8 hours, and they could actually hear the methodology. Now, not just hearing it. Day one, they actually saw it, and the last day, they would be put back into the classroom, and that afternoon, we would debrief, and it was amazing to see the teacher say, I saw the teacher-pupil dialogue, that Socratic method that you were talking about. I saw how eager the children were in which to give back to the overall classroom. So that will be the type of concept, and that way you can work with more teachers. It becomes a force multiplier. Rather than working with one or two, now you're able to work with 10, 15 teachers at a time over the course of a school year. That does equal up to hundreds of teachers.
Right, right. Because your mother's, right just on YouTube, there are people in Africa that have used her, methodology, Central America, probably parts of South America. And as you mentioned, China, the person that you're working with now, she originally is from China. So it's now, how did she read the book in China or what?
She did. And as a matter of fact, Penguin published the book in Chinese, so it's been republished in Chinese. As a matter of fact, there are royalties that still come from the book to this day, And when they republished it there in China, those royalties just kind of skyrocketed. LA, I think it's the importance of education around the world, and I don't know why American or American children just don't value education as – and let me take that back. I don't say that they don't value. As the caller that just called in, parents don't impress upon their children the importance. That's the missing link here. That's the missing variable. That's the variable from the equation that doesn't equal up to let me come to school and not disrespect the instructor, learn all that I can, because my generic heirs are going to be depending upon what I learn in this classroom.
The educational system today, mainstream in the United States, and probably some other Western countries too, but if I had kids in school today, I would have them homeschooled. You know, because based on, a couple of months ago or whatever, if not a month ago, what happened up in Michigan, right outside of Detroit, I think.
Sure.
Which is not an isolated incident. And then I used to be in the classroom in D.C. back in the early 80s. And in some of those public schools, not all, but some of them, it was rough then. That's what drove me out to become an entrepreneur. But now some of the entrepreneurs that I do follow or tutors that basically, you know, they have an entrepreneurial – I mean, they're basically doing what you do in an entrepreneurial sense. And so I like their business model. But and then if you look at what's happening in the Chicago, not only Chicago, but state-sponsored schooling is basically education with politics. So I like the private side of it, like with your mother. Your mother, when she started her school, she eliminated the politics part. I mean, government politics part of it. So.
Well,
that's why I liked her model so much.
Absolutely. Well, LA, you said something very, very pivotal, that you said if you had children today that you would homeschool them. Well, education is cumulative, and it affects the breed. I know that I speak for a host of parents that during this pandemic, they saw just what a difficult task it was as far as working with their student, not because they were far behind, not because they didn't have the necessary skill set, but as parents, they didn't know what to supplement, what type of concepts to supplement their children's education with. So homeschooling now becomes homefooling if the parent doesn't have the education or doesn't have the overall concepts in which to do the job that they think that they're doing better than the public school. So now they're fooling themselves into thinking that they're doing a better job. Yes, the child is a lot safer because they don't have to worry about some of the school violence that is there. But now you have the upheaval of ignorance, the upheaval of the child missing out on some of the core academics that child is going to need in which to propel them through this world.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But now in the age that we're living in now, let's say you have a parent that is not, they want their children homeschooled, but they necessarily don't. I mean, I think there are enough options out there today where they can go online and find other people or parents who are qualified to teach certain core, curriculum topics. I know it's a lot more organized now than it was when I was coming up. So I think that option's out there today, where the parent wants their child homeschooled, but they, matter of fact, right here where I'm at in Florida, my next door neighbor has a gaggle full of kids right now that she homeschools, but other parents bring their kids to her, and then after the school day, they pick their kids up and take them back home. So I think that's how a lot of parents are handling that, you know, solving that problem today.
Sure.
But that brings in another entrepreneurial piece. Is there any type of workshop or seminar that you guys might offer on how to guide parents that want to have their children homeschooled?
Well, like I said, currently I'm looking at the computer here. There are at least four concepts that are in the works. One of the components is for teachers, and the other three are for students. And this being something that is not something that you can replicate like you're cooking hamburgers. This is not a
right.
McDonald's franchise. It is a concept, even though there's a curriculum, it is now how do you turn that curriculum into a concept that is not just a money-making platform, but actually a
right.
platform that will address some of the academic issues that the student may be having. So those are the components and why I and the rest of my team have not rushed to create a plethora, a cornucopia, a gamopery of just concepts to just say sign up for this, sign up for that, and it's
right.
not going to truly address some of the issues that the children are actually
mm-hmm.
having.
Now, let's go back in time a little bit. Now, your mother started with Collins family, started with the one-room classroom in the duplex in Chicago. Matter of fact, is that building still standing?
It is, and my brother lives in it. Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is 3819 West Adams.
That should be a historic
mm-hmm.
site. That should be a historic site in Chicago. I'm glad he's got it. He's still in the family. So now
absolutely.
You guys expanded to another location after that, didn't you?
Well, the Rockstar Prince actually bought that location. He donated $300,000+ to the school. He actually came to the school, he and the band of the Revolution, and he said it was the type of school that he would have liked to have gone to. And just kind of a segue, has nothing to do with the question that you just asked. He said, do some good for the school with that $300,000+, but he gave her an additional $50,000 and said, Mrs. Collins, you have worked so hard. I want you to buy something nice for yourself. And she says, well, I'm going to use it for the school. He said, no, the stipulation that you get these monies are you have to tell me what you're going to do with the money. And she was going to buy that 84 Corvette. And I remember we went into the Chevrolet dealership and no one would wait on her. Right down the street was Lynch Porsche, and she wound up getting a 1984 Porsche 928. And
well-deserved.
So, yeah, that was their Rockstar Prince. Beg your pardon?
Well-deserved.
Yes, yes, yes. So I – and my sister, myself, and my brother used to say that as beautiful as the automobile was, that, you know, she would go shopping with it every now and then and drive it back and forth to the school. She was very, very dedicated to – the school that she had worked so hard at which to build.
Okay, so that expanded. Now, did you had, what, a location or school opening in Milwaukee at one time?
Yes. The school that the Rockstar Prince helped to buy, the location was 4146 West Chicago Avenue. I don't know what – I think that it's some type of church now,
But I share the story because I remember when Barbara Bush came to the school right across the street from 4146 West Chicago Avenue was the welfare office. And when Barbara Bush came, they closed down all of the streets, the FBI, the state police, Chicago police. They had snipers on rooftops. And the reason why I share the story was it apparently it was the day that the welfare office gave out checks. And the and those welfare recipients were very angry that they couldn't get to the welfare office because the street, because all of Chicago Avenue, that whole block was closed down. And how irate that they were and how the police had to literally control the overall anger from those that were waiting to get to that office. The school also saw the likes of the Miss America that I believe the one Miss America that was deaf back in the 80s. Gene Wilder came to the school and a host of others and a host of other celebrities. But yes, the school there in Milwaukee was the Marva Collins Preparatory School in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay, all right. So we had now, when you opened up the school that Prince donated money for, was it still did you still hold classes at the one room, the original location?
Yeah. Well, it was fortunate that it was bigger, so there were actual classrooms. There were one, two,
right.
three, four. I think there were like six classrooms, and my used some of the money that she had left over from the buy something nice for yourself and bought the building next door, which they called Clarence Hall, named after my father. And it was kind of a breakout area. It was a area to have assemblies, and it's where the teacher training wound up taking place there in Clarence Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a large enough room. I don't know what the square footage was, but it was a large enough room to house comfortably at least 50 teachers. And when they would do the overall seminars.
Okay. All right. Now, when you expanded to the larger facilities, things like, I know at the original building, how long did you have for lunch at the original one-room schoolhouse?
30 minutes.
Versus
30
when
minutes.
You got to the big
30
building.
Minutes. Mm-hmm. 30 minutes.
30 minutes.
And there was
no
recess. No
matter what location?
There was no gym. That was at the 3819 West Adams, and that carried over even to the 4146 West Chicago Avenue. Both of them were named Westside Preparatory School. Keep in mind the 4146 West Chicago Avenue. It was still on the west side of Chicago. But I guess my mother's overall belief the message behind the 30 minutes were that as well as you feed the body, you must also feed the brain and a full mouth, and a full stomach and not having a full head to match. Then there's not the overall balance. And just seeing that, knowing that that food in some of the homes was an overall problem, and without the children actually getting a quality education, that problem was going to repeat itself in future generations. So it was just very important that children, especially children that needed the help with overall academics, that not taking that lengthy lunch period, but now using using that crucial time to wind up embracing some of the academics that were lacking.
Now, let me ask you now, with the 30-minute lunch period was, was it, students bring their own brown bag or lunchbox or
there was no formal lunchroom with a lunch counter and those types of concepts. Children brought brown bag, brought lunchbox, those types of lunches.
Okay, all right. The reason why I ask that is because some schools today, high schools at least, you know, they might have a McDonald's inside the school now. And
right.
What I've discovered over the years is there's a direct relationship between what you ingest inside of your body, because some of the stuff that we call food really isn't food.
Sure.
And Viata's more qualified to speak on this, because Viata basically watches what she eats and her family eats and all that. Viata, could you comment on the relationship of what you feed your grandchildren versus what you might see, because you're pretty close to your grandchildren's schooling, what they might get at this children's school, I mean, for lunch or whatever, if we out of there. Her light's still on. I guess her light's still on, but she's away. But I've noticed, like, say, there's, well, I think we've all eaten meals where it tasted great, but we get sleepy afterwards. And then I've had other meals where, like, I have a juice extractor. And one of my favorite juices is I'll take some kale or some spinach, some white grapes, and some granny green apples, and I'll juice them and mix them all up. And I'll have a nice green drink. And that green, I can drink this like one in the morning and one in the afternoon, and I'm totally energized. I don't feel like eating. My energy level goes up. I guess some people that would call that a living food drink or live foods or whatever. Whereas with some public schools and even private schools, on the lunch menu, there might be tater tots or this, that, or the other. And if you have a processed food diet, you know, eventually that could affect your physical health and even immediately your thinking. So I think schools are probably a bit more aware of that today. But with the new Marvin Collins, with the reboot of Westside Prep, well, will nutrition, the study of nutrition,
absolutely,
be included in that curriculum?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay,
that
great.
Will be an integral component of what the children overall consume. The school here, I'm not exactly sure where the – I'm sure it's through Title I or one of those concepts, but there is a lunch program, and the lunches are helping.
Okay, good, good. Now, I noticed – I saw a video on YouTube where the children in – I don't know if it was China or Japan but their lunches are planned out, which I thought that was pretty interesting. I don't know if they do that in Finland, but in any event. So now, the school is rebooting in Nevada. Why Nevada versus Chicago?
Like I said, I was in an airport, was where I met Jen Lan, and somehow we got talking about education, and we traded information, and then she pushed for the opening a Marvin Collins Academy in Reno Sparks, Nevada. A board was formed, mm-hmm. and 13 board members, I mean board meetings later, they're putting the events in motion in which to make it happen, like I said, in 2023.
Okay, great. I'm excited for that and whatnot. Well, I'm sure you're going to have a lot of success with it. Any anticipated target number for enrollment?
I believe, if memory serves correct, the enrollment will be 300 students.
Okay. All right. Now, what you say it's going to be a charter school?
It is going to be a charter school.
All right. So that's really, I don't know much about charter school or the public school.
A charter school and a public school are synonymous. They are
okay.
The only difference is that the charter school, literally, without being redundant, has a charter from the United States government in which to operate with public school students.
Okay, got it. Now, will it be any? Well, let's go through the fundamentals for people that are not familiar with the Marvel Collins Way. What are like the core curriculums and the methodologies? What makes it stand out versus the typical public school or even many private schools?
And LA, I would have to say first and foremost, it is the morals and values that the school overall employs. Students are not just taught the reading, writing, and arithmetic. They are literally taught to be good human beings. They are taught to leave a positive footprint on this planet. Students learn the poetry, all of the concepts that make them great orators. Students learn to be individual thinkers, not just following the overall crowd. And I guess that becomes a very important message when we see what happened there on January 6th and there at our nation's capital, where you have it was the telltale story of William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, Mark Anthony whipped the crowd into a frenzy and said, "Mischief, thou art afoot. Now do what thou wilt." That's exactly what those individuals who were at the helm whipped everyone into a overall frenzy and let them do the overall damage. And going back to what you originally said, what does the methodology employ? What does the methodology hold true? What does the methodology embrace? And it embraces a very literal person that has literature as one of its overall staples. So children learn not just to read. Children learn to learn from history. Children learn to decode words. Children are very, very versed in being able in that overall Socratic method of teacher-pupil dialogue, from what I know, more or less how Jesus taught. Now asking a series of questions in which to derive the overall answer. Children learn the camaraderie and we just celebrated Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, that if any of the students here and using the overall methodology are to disagree with one another, as they will, because it's human nature, but I'm telling one of the students that Dr. Martin Luther King had a dream, not a nightmare, and he said we must all learn to live together as brothers or perish alone as fools. Now, which one do you want to do, live together or be a fool? And I have never met a child yet that says, "Mr. Collins, I'd like to be the fool," resoundingly. They always say, "I guess, live together." Well, it can't be a guess. You have to know that from the hours of 8 until 3, this child is your classmate, and you will treat them as such. That during Abraham Lincoln's inaugural address during the Civil War, he said, "We are not enemies. We are friends. Although passions now strained, they must never break the bonds of our affections." And that's just it, that there's that camaraderie. There's that esprit de corps that a Marva Collins-esque student employs. It's not that I remember I was at one assignment there in Oklahoma, a very affluent school. And one young man said, "Mr. Collins, I'm the smartest child in the entire room." And I said, "Well, we're in here breathing your bright air, so I guess that makes us bright by association." There is no individual mm-hmm. effort at the Marva Collins School. It is every student is there to pick that other student up. There was a concept of why do we fall down so that we can get back up. So if a child falls down as far as not having a successful answer in the classroom, the other students don't laugh at that student. That student surrenders and says, "I don't know, but I would like to know." And maybe another child will come right behind that child. If the child's name is Patrick, "Patrick, the answer that you're looking for there, if it's mathematics, they will decode the overall problem for them. If it is the word that they're trying to sound out, Patrick, the word there is," and telling the child whatever that word is. That's what a Marva Collins student gets from the overall methodology.
Okay. I'm going to use the movie, which, you know, with movies, it's, you know, they take dramatic license on at least probably 20 to 25% of the movie. Your mother took students that, and correct me if I'm wrong,
that the school system had written off, that the school system had called retarded.
Mm-hmm. Right. With
learning
the reboot,
disabled.
Exactly. With the reboot, what type of students will be enrolled in that school?
Well, Marva Collins Academy 2.0 because when you have a charter school, there is an assessment team. So it's not just taking students in because they want to be there. If the school can't truly service that student's overall academic needs, then that child will not be able to come to the Marva Collins Academy. And that's not me saying that. That's not our principal saying that. That is what is best. It is, I guess, using the overall analogy that a doctor doesn't prescribe aspirin for all of their patients because everyone ills differently. So making sure that we have the right medicine for the overall student. Now, that student that has been in a school where they just, and it might have been through their own vices that they didn't receive the education that they need be. That might be a platform for that child to go to the Marva Collins overall academy. The student that learns differently might be very well be, and I won't even say might, would be a candidate for the Marva Collins 2.0.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because it, you guys did a lot of good work with it, and I'm sure you'll do good work with this as well. You say the schools do.
Let me stop you there one quick second.
Next year. Sure.
Well, yes, I just wanted to share a very quick story just to show how quickly children learn. In the kindergarten here, the work that I'm currently doing, everyone knows the mm-hmm. basic story of the three little pigs. But working with the kindergarten here, I told them that pigs come from the Suidae family. That includes pigs, hogs, and wild boars. And the wolf comes from the Lupus family. That includes dogs, wolves, and foxes. But that in and of itself would have been enough. But then I took it one step further. Now, keep in mind, these are five-year-olds, and I taught them about Hooke's law of elasticity. And from, I forget Hooke's first name, I believe he was in the 1800s, he was an architect, but Hooke's law of elasticity states that if you poke holes in a solid structure, it will weaken that structure and it can be easily defeated. So where that comes into play, once the story of the three little pigs plays out, I now ask five-year-olds, how could the wolf have gotten the third little pig? And the child said, Mr. Collins, the lupine could have gotten the Suidae by using Hooke's law of elasticity. And asking the child, what was Hooke's law of elasticity? Mr. Collins, Hooke's law of elasticity states that poking holes in a wall will make that wall weak and it can be defeated. Now you have, that is the thinking component of a child now taking that basic story and making it so much more.
Okay. All right. Well, I know it'll be a success. Now, it's due to open, what you say, next year, 2023, right?
Correct.
All right. So charter school, which means they will be, well, essentially, no cost out of pocket.
If you live in that neighborhood,
You
live in that neighborhood, your child will be able to attend that school free of cost.
Okay. Now, have you guys selected a location yet in Nevada? I mean,
the other board members or my fellow board members are in the process of doing exactly that.
Okay. Now, what if somebody that lives in Chicago gets wind of, and they will, the reboot, the Marvel Collins 2.0, Westside Academy 2.0, and they say, well, wait a minute, it started here. Can we reboot it here?
And the answer to that question would be yes. The answer to that question would be yes. And what would wind up happening, keep in mind, LA, that if that group or the individuals, what would happen is they would actually come to Nevada and shadow under that school and use, and there will be a teacher training component there. And for that type of mentorship, it would very well be a 10-month school year, where there would be someone that would be from the Chicago that would come to Reno Sparks and be able to actually see day-to-day what's going on there as far as an administrator and as far as a overall teaching team. So there might be a kindergarten teacher or first grade teacher or one through the first grades that the Marvin Collins Academy there in Reno Sparks will be kindergarten through third grade.
Okay.
So, yes, those will be the – so if someone were to say I'd like to start
– kindergarten through third grade, it will not be getting into junior high school or high school?
Well, what we're looking to do is after the first year, then they'll add the fourth through the eighth grade. And what our hopes are, our children, and we will be able to recruit from within. Sure, there will be new students that have to replenish the kindergarten and maybe the overall first grades, but all of our grades will wind up feeding one another. So now we have a child that has bought into the overall methodology. We won't have some of the discipline problems that may be seen in other schools because the children have already bought into the overall methodology.
Right. That's smart. I like to hear that. Yeah, that's very smart. With that. Yeah, because I'm pretty sure, when people hear about it in Chicago, which I'm sure some have already, they'll want it. Well, let's reboot it here as well. So still the 30-minute lunches, no recess.
Well, now Marvin Collins 2.0, because it's a public school, charter. It will have to have the overall gym. It will have to have the overall recess. It will have to have music and all of the academic curriculum that a regular public school has.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, there will be recess.
Ms. Gray still has the students here only have a 30-minute lunch.
Okay. All right.
But they do have the gym and the resource and those types of concepts, music.
Now, when the school opens, will Patrick Collins be there?
Well, and I don't want to say unfortunately, yes, he will. And I don't quite know how with the book tour that I'm currently scheduled for with Newman Publishing and a lot of the other. And yes, it is currently being edited by Lisa Woodson, who's a New York Times best-selling author. She's a romance novelist by genre, but she has taken what I have written and they're marrying the two, and it's becoming quite a wonderful marriage. It has been a marital bliss. And all the chapters that they have revamped.
Okay, so that's Learning Curve, and that's due to when is that due to be released?
They are looking for March of this year, March of 2020.
Okay. Will it be available on Kindle?
It'll be available on every platform from digital to hard copy. And on all of the platforms that are out there, Kindles, Amazon, and the host of others.
Yeah, I'm a Kindle person. I just look it up, get it on my phone and tablet, and read it from there.
Well, now, LA, you know that you are due a signed copy. You will have every copy that is, and then all of our friends of there. So you know that you will have a signed copy, whichever form that there is.
Looking forward to it.
Absolutely,
definitely looking forward to it. Yeah, I've read your mother. Do I have two of your mother's books? I know I read one. It's somewhere about 5 or 10 feet away from me right now.
Well, I will have to send you the other book.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's still in print. Ordinary Teachers, Extraordinary. Yes, Extraordinary.
Now,
Teachers.
I haven't read that one. Yeah, I haven't read that.
Okay.
Now, there's not a Facebook. There's a YouTube channel, because that's where I said. I think you did those videos last year.
I think some of those I think those are the videos that Jen Lan has posted from some of our board meetings. And I think the first one is from the first board meeting, which I'm surprised that
now,
you found it. I don't know whether I'm that happy with it.
Yeah, now, the videos I saw, it was just you speaking.
Yes, it is. It was me, and it was from – but keep in mind, all of this was via Zoom. So you see me speaking, but it was – yes, it was from one of the first board meetings that we had for for the Marva Collins Academy reboot.
Okay, all right. Now, your brother, has he gotten involved at all the 2.0?
No,
my brother original school, I mean, I know he helped with it, you know. Did a lot of the classroom stuff.
Exactly. My brother was always the one that was more of the administrative side. He was the one that brought the school out of the dark ages. I remember he wrote for the – like when Apple computers first came out from the home computer to more or less an office-type computer, he wrote to some organization and got the school its first computer. And because before that they were using typewriters. So I guess this would have been like 86, 87, 88 maybe.
And so, yes, he was. He did the newsletter. He wrote for He wrote to foundations, and did more or less some of the fundraising concepts. His wife is a principal at a Lutheran school there on the west side of Chicago, and her school employs some of the Marva Collins methodology.
Okay, good, good. Well, it's the Marva Collins brand, because it is a brand. It was a brand before people even started using the word brand.
Exactly.
I just know some people, when I bring it up, they would probably be delighted to be involved with a 2.0 version right there in Chicago. And I'm glad you guys still have the original building still in the family.
Absolutely. Well, L.A., feel free to pass my information to those individuals there in Chicago. And like I said, what would wind up happening is we would actually invite them out to, once the school opens its overall doors, and I think that it would be very I'm looking for that exact word, that would wind up encapsulating the power of what needs to be said or relayed here. Inviting them out and having them embrace how a charter school, Marva Collins 2.0 school, is actually run. Because keep in mind, my mother's school was, as you said, L.A., was more or less a private school. So this
right.
would be quite the experiment of turning the Marva Collins Preparatory School into a public school. Rob Rao there in Milwaukee. So it has been done, because that's what that school was. It was a public school, charter school. So this will be the second go round for the Marva Collins methodology to have been placed into a public school type setting.
Now, let me ask you this. I don't know much about charter schools, other than I know the government's involved with it some kind of way. But isn't it easier with the original business model, but you would have to rely 100% basically on tuition?
Right. And in this day and age, especially when you have parents that many of them have lost their jobs because of COVID.
Right.
So I think that business model may be a little bit would be a lot harder in which to put into fruition. And also keep in mind, there was a different mindset back then. A lot of parents would want their children, as you saw even in the Marva Collins story, you remember the one parent who said that he wasn't too keen on sending his daughter to that school. He was like, where's the gym?
Right.
You know, where's the lunchroom? Where are some of the trappings that you would see in a normal type school?
Pulled up and looked at the building. Yeah.
Right, exactly. He said, and you gave that woman our money for this? And so I really do think that would be, and I think that might be a sticking point for a lot of parents, because it doesn't, even the school here that I'm in now, it was originally the City Hall building. It wasn't meant to be an overall school. And the classrooms look like classrooms, but when you come into the building, it looks like an office building.
Well, you know, this is where I go back to the Faith Street, the Faith Boulevard concept. Because in high school, 3 years of high school, I went to a parochial school. And if you look at the history of the parochial school, not only where I went, but probably all through the, I call it the CYO system, which stands for Catholic Youth Organization. This school started in a monastery. Their first classrooms were in a monk's monastery. And, you know, the parents liked it. And then the enrollment went up for the next year, but they didn't have enough room in the monastery. So what they did was, what they did have, and this is what I like, the principle that the parochial schools have used, and not only them, but I'm just using them as an example, but the Collins family did that too. It's start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can. So that, and then God or the universe takes care of the rest. So the enrollment went up for the next year. They did not have enough room in the monastery for more classroom space. But they didn't have the money to build a new school. So what they did have is a six-car garage. So the teachers got together, just like you and your family, the teachers got together and they volunteered and they took their handyman skills and they converted a six-car garage into a school, a school building, the best they could. And then the enrollment went up for that and they started to get money where they can hire a general contractor to, you know, slowly build the school. The school is right outside of D.C. It's the Master Catholic High School. But a lot of schools in the archdiocese around the country or around the globe, they started the exact same way that the Collins family started the Marva Collins School, is they started with, once again, start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can with what you have. And, I mean, just like, who can anticipate Prince would drop $300,000 plus off?
Sure.
On day one, the day one that you got started that, Prince wasn't even on the radar.
No.
So, anyway, but that's my whole thing on, you know, just take humble beginnings, man, and just work with it.
Absolutely. Well, my mother always had a saying that just because you lack a noble past doesn't mean that you lack a noble and successful future. And LA, one of my contacts has texted me and said that they were holding online, so maybe you have a call holding.
If they would press one, if they press one, and I can see their hand. And I can patch into the conversation. I don't know what area code they're from, but.
And she actually jokingly said, "I have my hand raised like I'm in the second grade here."
Oh, wait a minute. Now I see it. Okay, let me go to 305, area code 305. Your number. Your mic is open. Good morning. Hold it. I hope. Did I press the right number? Okay.
You did. I am
you know
so
the first
sorry.
Three numbers.
Tuesday. Yes, I am here.
Oh,
I'm
great.
So sorry. I'm speaking with myself on mute. I've been listening to this wonderful, wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, LA, for just a wonderfully timely conversation. So I just wanted to jump right in on a question to Mr. Collins. I had the pleasure of having a preview at his upcoming, certain to be best-selling book, Learning Curve. And in chapter 17, Mr. Collins, you say, one child, one teacher, one book, one pen can change the world. So this is my question. Right now, we are really effectively in the middle of an educational crisis because of the impact of the pandemic. And many parents and teachers are looking for just creative ways of helping their students to stay on course or to certainly, no pun intended, not to fall behind all of the students. So since you have this methodology, what are some of the ways through your book or through online learning do you do you envision being able to share these principles and these teaching points either to homeschool children or to teachers around the nation? Because I agree with what was said. Not only is Marva Collins Way 2022 2.0, in the expression of Patrick Collins, is a tremendous brand that's critically needed in terms of the content. I see the work that you're doing at the Gray Charter School. The children are just overwhelmed because you believe in their potential and they reach it. But it's just a pivotal thing right now that's needed across the nation and beyond. So I just wanted to hear you talk about what are some of the things that we can anticipate your reach extending to now. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely, and thank you, caller. In answer to your query, I've used these concepts or suggested these concepts before. And no, they're not the panacea. They're not the cure-all, but they are definitely definitely the medicine that will address some of the homeschooling issues that many parents might face. One of them is the Book of Virtues by William Bennett, and there are a host, a collection, a menagerie of different stories in the Book of Virtues that does exactly that. It gives your child virtue. It gives your child value. I know that that's one of your brands as far as overall value, and that's exactly what this book does. It starts from the beginning, and each chapter gives a numerous stories on compassion, on stalwart, on truth. And the second concept would be Edie Hirsch, and that's what it starts at what every first grader, and I believe it goes up to fifth grade. And that's E, period, D, Hirsch, H-I-R-S-C-H, Edie Hirsch Jr. And like I said, it starts off at what every kindergartner all the way up to what every fifth grader should know. And some of the concepts in there, it is a classical education of mythology, of poems, of literature, of art, of music. It has everything from the Chopin to the Mozarts, to the Van Goghs, to the Degas, and everything in between. So those two resources, and that's exactly what I would call them, educational resources, are a wonderful starting point, are a wonderful focal point for that parent that is homeschooling their student.
Thank you so much. Great conversation. I'll keep listening. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, caller.
I got a question for you. I was trying to find the audio on it. I'm still looking for it. Generation Z, which the lower end of Generation Z, which is, I don't know, maybe 10 years old, something like that. If I can find the audio during this, because I'm operating on a new phone. There's an audio I play about, she's 12 years old right now. When she was 10, her name is Lauren Nelson. When she was 10, she went out and bought a camper for $400. And she fixed it up for another $400. Now, the $400, I mean, the $800 total she had saved up from, I guess, doing odd jobs, babysitting, and that type thing. And I guess you can call it a tiny house. But at 10 years old, well, actually 11, she was looking for it at 10, found it at 11. She's 12 years old now. But there are other other people that you can see on YouTube that are Generation Z, that are preteens or teens, who have gone out and built their own house. Typically, they're tiny houses, but nevertheless, they're functional with a kitchen, bathroom, sleeping quarters. There's another young lady, her YouTube channel is Marie TV, M-A-R-E-E TV, one word. When she was 15, she got pregnant, single mother, teenage mother pregnant. But instead of going to the social services office, she, wait a minute, did we lose Patrick? I think we did. Okay. Maybe he'll call back in. Block. That's Blog Talk. All right, wait a minute. I think we lost Patrick, so I'll cut that short. And see if he'll call back in. Okay, well, anyway, let's see if he'll call back in. We've been listening to Patrick Collins, and he announced they're doing a reboot of Westside Preparatory School that his mother, or his family rather, started in Chicago a number of years ago. And it'll be opening its doors next year in the state of Nevada. And let's see. Okay, I'm trying to navigate my new phone. Let me reach out to Patrick on my, let me see. I may have to send him a, see if we can get him back in, because he disappeared off of my board. Okay. But anyway, oh, wait a minute. So in any event, just keep it posted here. We'll make announcements, and we've had him on several times already, so he will be back. I just sent him a text because he could have got booted. I don't see him on my board. Patrick, you there? Okay, let's do a musical interlude, see if we can get him back.
Ago, we broadcast a story about Marva Collins, a Chicago teacher who started her own elementary school on the city's west side, West Side Prep. Marva claimed that with love, hard work, and no-nonsense teaching, inner-city children could compete with anyone academically. it was, to many people, quite an inspiring story. But not to Charles Murray, author of the controversial book about race and intelligence called The Bell Curve. On page 399, Murray writes that Marva's celebrated anecdotes about her students are too good to be true, that there is no hard evidence of her success. We decided to check it out. Before we begin, let's go back to where we began 16 years ago.
You have it all here on West Adams Street, all the familiar big city blight. The forever broken windows, the burnt out flats, the disemboweled abandoned cars. And then you have 3819 West Adams.
The Canterbury Tales are about whom?
Jeffrey Jones.
They're about whom?
How many pilgrims?
How many were there?
There are no frills at West Side. The emphasis is on basic education, with an even stronger emphasis on literature and composition. There are no teacher breaks, no teacher desks. She is on her feet and over their shoulders all day, pushing them, cajoling them, and praising them.
Very, very good, Lisa. Very, very good. Cum laude.
And the results are apparent even to a casual bystander. Alert and challenged children being pushed way beyond the boundaries most school systems set.
Who's your favorite author?
Jeffrey Chaucer and Shakespeare.
Booker T. Washington and Hans Christian Andersen. My favorite book is The Greek Myth.
Greek Myth.
I like Fyodor Dostoevsky and Dante Alighieri and Shakespeare.
And your favorite book?
Divine Comedy.
Okay.
I like Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, and I like Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre.
So what happened to those 34 students we met at West Side Prep? Charles Murray says by implication that their apparent intelligence and promise was a fraud, that what we saw was just too good to be true. What was it? We traced 33 of the 34 and flew a group of them back to Chicago, back to West Side Prep's new location, for a reunion of sorts.
Aren't you pretty?
To see if Charles Murray's allegations in The Bell Curve are true. To see whether or not these young men and women lived up to Marva's claims. Christopher Stubblefield.
We learned to read hard work.
The 8-year-old with the big voice is now at university in Texas. And Erica McCoy Pace graduated last spring from Norfolk State University. When you saw her last, she was listing her favorite authors.
Emerson, Henry David Thoreau.
And what about the rest of our class of 79?
Michael Anderson, Taylor.
Terry Holmes, owner operator of transportation company.
LaTanya Singleton, preschool teacher.
James Lowe, staff sergeant, United States Air Force.
Sabrina Yates, sixth grade teacher.
Rossell Winters, law student.
Louis Johnson, operations manager.
Xavier Jones, teacher, criminal justice major.
Craig Brunner, clerk for the state's attorney's office.
I remember I had said in front of all my classmates here that I want to become an attorney. And it's funny, I'm actually in law school and I graduate next year. And this college told me, oh yes, you can do it. You can do whatever you want to do. It's possible. And I'm living proof it is possible.
A number of you are teachers. Were you inspired by her to become teachers?
Definitely. She just gave so much to me personally in terms of always being reassuring. I mean, just the small things, like she would grab my face and say, pretty girl.
You're brilliant. Honey, you're brilliant.
That's right.
Especially Craig. She would take his head and raise it up. Speak up, honey, you're brilliant.
Right.
And, you know, after someone telling you that,
every day.
Every day. 5 days a week for 3 or 4 years, you know, that's in you. That becomes a part of you. You are brilliant, honey.
And then we were like doing Shakespeare. We put on the plays and we had the 3 weeks.
But Charles Murray stated that claims of long-term academic achievement would typically fade as these children grow up.
Sagacious means what? Means you're very what?
Right. The words that we learned, it was nice because when we left and we heard someone talking, using a word, we knew what that word meant. And now in school, a lot of times we get the reading list on the course outline. I've read most of the books on that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I've read that, I've read that, or the teacher will be talking about something. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I read that book.
Fourth
all the students may feel like this.
Gather, where's Xavier?
Right here.
You use your notes?
Your West Side prep notes on Hamlet to write a paper when?
I used it in high school, and I also used it in English lit class when I was in college. And looking back at my handwriting, I was like, wow, you know, I was like, these are good notes.
Murray also raised questions about Marva's claims that 5- and 10-year-olds who'd been labeled unteachable were capable of reading Chaucer and Shakespeare. Well, Michael Anderson was said to have a learning disability when he entered Marva's school at age 9.
I had a client just a couple months ago brought up Shakespeare out of nowhere. And we sat after having coffee for 3 hours, you know? Well, what did you learn Shakespeare? Fourth grade. I knocked him off his seat. He couldn't believe it. Fourth grade?
And there is Erica, who is considered a hopeless case at age 6.
Basically, I was told that I was borderline retarded, that I would never read. So I was basically written off.
I was supposed to be put back a couple of grades, but I wasn't when I came to Ms. Collins.
When we saw Craig Brunner in 1979, he was reading his essay about Cleopatra.
Very, very long ago, there was a queen called...
What was the secret of her success, of motivation, or what?
The confidence, how you have a brain, you can do it on your own. You don't have to wait for anybody.
She killed herself with a poisonous snake.
Very, very true.
I say to every child, for example, morally, there's no one with your eyes. There's no one with your nose. There's no one with your hair. That makes you really special.
These days, her message and methods are repeated by teachers she's trained for her 3 elementary schools in Chicago. She is mostly on the road, giving seminars for teachers all over the country. Above all, she tells them every child is teachable. Every child can learn.
Ask the slowest children in your class how many children know the rap songs, and they all raise their hands, and I'll say them for me. And I says, good. If you can do that, you can learn the Canterbury Tales in Old English, too. I don't know half of what those rap songs are saying, but they know every line. What makes us think, then, that they become such learning disabilities when they get to school?
But Charles Murray...